Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
On X at Rich Zeoli. In case you missed it earlier in the show, Philly will give you a ticket, a bus ticket. You can go anywhere. You just have to say you're unhoused, and then you can get a one-way bus ticket for anywhere. It's the greatest scam on earth, brought to you by the city of Philadelphia. So there you go. Recently, there have been a number of sporting events in New Jersey where the cops have been called, parents have been fighting, and teams have been suspended. And so the question is, why is this happening? And does something need to be done about it? Here to talk about it with me is Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn, Republican member of the State Assembly. Vicky, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Last time I saw you briefly, you were going to see Jimmy Failla in Red Bank, and you had a good time.
Excellent. It was an excellent time. It's always a good time in Red Bank with some of our friends. So hope to see you there soon. Hopefully you come and visit again.
That would be great. What's the problem that's going on in New Jersey? I mean, I have young kids. My son is 11 almost. So I haven't seen anything like this at his games. I mean, once in a while you get a dad who's maybe yelling a little loud or something like that. But for the most part, kids are getting along. Parents are getting along. I haven't seen anything personally, but I've been reading some of the stories about what's been happening right in our area. Some pretty bad stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's been sadly escalating. Some people attributed it to the pandemic, but there seems to be usually explosions at all different types of games, whether it's soccer games, basketball games, hockey. I mean, hockey, I guess we expected a little bit more with all the padding. But a season does not go by without us seeing some bench clearing, something that, and then it goes like a little bit of a step forward, like the incident that happened up in with St. Ben's and St. Peter's, where a kid went after someone, one of the photographers, at his neck while there was like a melee between the players. That's what happened, and fists are being thrown. I just think. You know, I'm trying to figure out what this is all about, but it seems there's a lot of pressure put on these kids and not enough. These kids are losing the lessons that you're supposed to be learning from sports, to learning how to win with grace, lose with grace, learning leadership skills that will take you in life, learning camaraderie and just, you know, having a good time. All of those lessons are lost on the field in all these incidents that these kids are being exposed to. So I think we can do better. I know we could do better. And I've been in the legislature now for 4 years, and it's an issue that's brought to my attention by parents, athletes alike, asking us to help do something about it.
So Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn, it's the kids fight. I get that. Sometimes athletes get a little bit fired up. But in some of these instances, it's also the parents, too, who are fighting with other parents and sometimes even fighting. And there was one, I think, where a coach went after a referee and hurt him pretty bad.
Yeah.
To me, that's inexcusable. You know, I get athletes get the testosterone's flow and they're fired up. Mm-hmm. And like I get that. I mean, I'm not saying it's OK, but I understand it. But for parents who are supposed to be there setting an example, it's wrong. And, you know, sometimes it's I think there was a fight that broke out at one game over a cowbell. I don't even understand how that happened, but it turned into a physical altercation between adults over a cowbell. Like, that's not okay. And it's sending a very bad message to our kids.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to reset and remember why we're at these games. You know, you're there just to watch, cheer them on, maybe be a ride to and from. Sometimes I try to go old school. Maybe I suggest to some of the parents, too, who are pretty intense. You know, when I was younger, parents really didn't come to our games. They dropped us off and picked us up afterwards because they were right after school. Maybe you need to do that once in a while. Maybe you need to walk away. But that's not what's happening, and it's getting intense in the stands as sometimes it's as intense on the field. We had some legislation that increased the kind of protecting, because the issue we're having, too, is referees don't want to referee these games anymore. So there's a huge shortage. And that can lead to less games, less sports played. So we want to build protection around what we call team participants, like the coaches, the players, the referees. If someone, like I have seen coaches and parents go after referees, like follow them out to the parking lot. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, not okay.
And so we wanted to kind of elevate it and get some teeth to the law to say that's unacceptable. And we had some, you know, we did get some, it got through committee, it got through the assembly, but it stalled at the Senate. So hopefully it's something we do in lame duck, because if anything, it will send a message that everyone has to be on their best behavior on the sidelines, on the field. And one of the other things in talking to some people, especially with high school, I just came home from a high school game too. You know, these kids, especially like in the soccer world, it's soccer and all sports, they play like every single day. And they're playing like 80 minutes or 90 minutes of soccer a day. It doesn't stop. In club, they don't ever play that many days in a row. But in these high school sports, they're playing like every day and to the point of exhaustion. I do think that at least the public schools and all the schools, because they're all part of the NJSIAA, should really look at, do these schedules really help kids? Are they helping? They're not helping them learn, I don't think. I think we're just exhausting to the point, and they're not getting to the kid who throws the punch at a game later on. Are we getting that best kid in his best position if he's just tired from having played 6 days in a row? No, you're not. So what should you expect? We have to do better by these kids, I think.
I agree with you, Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn, and you know, there's a lot of pressure on these kids because of college scholarships and everything else. And, you know, I mean, for me, it's a situation where I want my son, my daughters to enjoy their sports, to not have it be such a thing that hangs over them. But it's become that. And I don't know, maybe it's because college has become so expensive and every parent thinks that if their kid has a modicum of talent and they work them to death, that they'll get a scholarship. I think maybe that might be part of it. I'm not sure.
I think so, too. But I'm here to tell you, I'm having one kid in college and, you know, one on the way, you're going to spend way more money in club sports than you are saving money in college. So people need to get that out of their heads and remember what sport is. I'm a mom of three girls. They all play sports. And the reason I want them to play sports because I need to, they're Jersey girls and they got to get tough. And that's what I'm trying to raise here, because life is hard. And I believe sports has made me tough and put me where I am today, Rich. I really do, as a lawyer in the courtroom and then also on the assembly floor. I would attribute sports and being a participant in sports as putting me in a position to do what I do. That's not, and I'm worried that's not what's happening for my daughters, because they're exposed to these environments where those good lessons learned from sports are lost. So I'm going to still be that spokesperson that we have to do better for these kids.
Well, I think parents have to be role models. I think parents have to set the example. I think going after a ref or going after a coach or going after another kid, these things are unacceptable, and parents should not do those things. So, yeah, I know. I agree with you on that 100%. We should, as parents, as adults, set the stage, teach them, be role models. That's very important. It's a big part part of the lesson. I think sports is also there to teach people how to respect the coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when we leave practice, I always tell my son, you know, say thank you, coach. This is volunteers. These are dads and moms who give up their time to coach on the weekends and at nights. And I don't have the luxury of doing that with my schedule, but I admire the fact that they do it because, you know, they're not getting paid for this. And so it's a lot. And so they deserve respect, you know, and I've seen some parents be very disrespectful to these coaches. And I just always think, you know, these are people volunteering their time here. So Vicky, while I have you, Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn, I want to ask you to put on your political hat for a moment. Tell us about the district that you represent in New Jersey and how things are looking as we're getting to November with Jack Cittarelli on the ballot, with you on the ballot, and every other member of the Assembly on the ballot. Are you there? Oh, Justin, did I lose her? Oh, okay. All right. We'll get her back on the phone. Road Warrior's saying wrong on the YouTube chat. I don't know what he's saying wrong to. I don't know if he thinks he's talking to me or the Assembly woman. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's the big... Well, I just tell you, and I was going to say with Vicky, Friday is the big day, Wildwood, our big rally. Please join us for that and come out and see us and be part of it for Jack Cittarelli. It's going to be a lot of fun. You'll do that this Friday. Just go to 1210wphd.com. I'll be doing the show live 3 to 7 p.m. right on the pier. It's going to be fantastic. Stop to Mulligan's and on the way down. And then you could have a pork roll, egg and cheese. And see Dom Giordano do his show. Oh, okay, Assemblywoman, you're back. I was just asking you to put on your political hat, your district, how things are looking as we head into November.
I think they're looking really strong. 13 is a strong performer in any election, but especially in the governor's race. We are very motivated. My local municipal chairs are out there. They're walking. Our county committee members are walking. Doors that we go to, they are very motivated to get out and vote for Jack. People are just sick and tired. I mean, we are the overtaxed of the country, and so people are really upset and they're done with it. And I do believe we're going to have big numbers here in District 13 and Monmouth County overall.
And Monmouth County, and this is important because Monmouth County, Ocean County, Atlanta County, Cape May County, the coast. We need to have big Republican turnout numbers, and I think people in those counties, particularly. If Mikey Sherrill wins, then say goodbye to the Jersey Shore because she's going to be all in on the windmills. We're going to be back to that again, and she's going to be pushing them. And, you know, if you live in any of those coastal areas, understand that.
Yeah, I mean, look, my constituents were beyond upset when they learned that those plans, those ideas, those programs were put in place, those deals were made in the dark of night, taking away local authority over it, local input over it. They just happened, and they did that by state law. And I make it my mission to educate. Today I was meeting with teachers and students at a local community college explaining to them how these decisions at the state level really matter. And that's one example, Rich. They passed a law before I got in the legislature. They passed a law that said local municipalities or counties had no role in deciding about these sightings of windmills off our coast. They took it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that's just one of the, you know, hundreds of examples in which what goes on in Trenton with this one party rule has devastated or attempted to devastate our state. Car insurance rates are through a roof. I reminded them today. I said, when I was in college, that was a big topic. We're right back to where we were because we have passed several laws that have made insurance unbearable. We're worse than California on car insurance rates.
That's insane.
It is insane. Plus paying the most in property taxes. Plus, you know, I sat next to a councilman today whose property tax rates are going up 25% in their town because the state's not funding their schools. I don't know who can still vote for this insanity. It has to stop. And like I said, in 13, I will give my chairs, my electeds here in 13. We don't take anything for granted. We're going to win big, but we want to win even bigger. And that's the attitude we need to have from Cape May County all the way up to Bergen and Sussex. We cannot take our foot off the gas. We have to walk. We have to talk. We have to talk to whomever we can to get them to the polls and vote. And that's what I'm committed to doing. And I know my colleagues in the assembly are as well.
Well said, my friend. Well said. Well, keep up the great work. Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn, thank you. And let's chat again soon before November, okay?
Yes, sounds great. Talk to you soon, Rich. Have a great
night.
Thank
you.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, Road Warrior, you have to elaborate on what you disagree with the guest on, because I need to understand your point. Attorney General Pam Bondi, let's cue up cut 29, please, gentlemen. Talking about Operation Arctic Frost. Today, she went before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I talked a lot earlier in the show about why are we not focusing on the fact that the Jack Smith was who I don't call a special counsel, was spying on potential jurors in a Joe Biden impeachment. Operation Arctic Frost was an unconstitutional abuse of power. Here's the Attorney General, cut 29.
Was Attorney General Garland, Director Wray, and or President Biden's White House aware of the FBI targeting Republican senators? Did they approve it? Now, let's be clear, either they knew and allowed it to happen, or they didn't know. And if they didn't know, it points to a lack of oversight of Jack Smith's runaway case.
This is Grassley, by the way.
Chairman Grassley, that's what we've been talking about when we refer to the weaponization of government. Operation Arctic Frost was an unconstitutional, undemocratic abuse of power. During Arctic Frost, the FBI also placed 92 linked Republican individuals and Republican groups, such as Charlie Kirk's Turning Point, on their list. This is the kind of conduct that shattered the American people's faith in our government, as I said in my opening statement. We are ending this weaponization. Our FBI is targeting violent criminals, child predators, and other lawbreakers, not sitting senators who happen to be from the wrong political party. Several of your colleagues sitting at this dais were targeted, and others. We will continue to stop that throughout the Justice Department. That is the ultimate weaponization of government.
Good. I mean, I'm glad that we're not doing the same thing, because I don't want that to happen. I know there are some people out there who are saying, we got the power now, let's go after them. I don't agree with that. Manrico Tronsalidi. I must respectfully disagree with Assemblywoman Flynn regarding club sports. Without their club sports participation, they would have received the opportunities that they received. Maybe I misheard her, Manrico. I think she was saying she was fine with the club sports. I think she was saying just that the travel teams were just working these kids to death. I don't think she was opposed to either, just kind of talking as a parent, but maybe I misunderstood her there. Look, it's one of those things with sports where you got to balance it. Like, my daughter Claire needs a lot of sleep. She's got a soccer game, I think, tomorrow night that's at, I don't know, 8 o'clock. And so, I mean, she's going to play, but she's going to be tired on Thursday, you know? So, I mean, it's like stuff like that, and she's in third grade, you know? So we're all trying to figure this out, and we're all, as parents, we're working on this. It's not easy. I got to talk to you about the cell phones, too. I got to bring that up, too. But I got other things to say regarding Jersey and Mikey Sherrill and how she's not doing with black voters. I'm going to get into a New York Post story I saw earlier today as the show goes on. But I spent a lot of time on this issue of the spying by the previous administration on these members of the United States Senate. It's appalling. It is unconstitutional. And I'm glad that they're, you know, 100% putting their foot on the gas about this. They can't let up. They need to keep going after this. They absolutely have to do it. And I want to just play again the clip of, well, actually, Pam Bondi went after Adam Schiff. This is a great moment from today. The Judiciary Committee oversight. This is cut number 12. Go ahead.
You did, but in case I just didn't hear you, what is the answer? Did he take the money?
Senator Schiff, that happened prior to my confirmation as Attorney General.
Do you know,
I said that.
Do you know sitting here what
all I know
money?
Is that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche and FBI Director Patel said there was no case. And Caroline Leavitt is one of the most trustworthy human beings I know.
So
and,
was she, you know, was Senator Schiff, she, was she
if
right?
you work for me, she, you would have been fired because you me. Were censured by Congress for lying.
You can stipulate to all your personal attacks on the Democratic members of the committee.
Personal attacks? You've been attacking my FBI director.
What we're interested in is the answer to these oversight questions.
You were asked by my colleague attacking good people.
Regular order, Madam Chair, so I can ask a question. You were asked by...
You know, he had plenty of time. I want the answers, too, regarding Epstein, but I'm just saying this guy had a lot of time when the Democrats were in charge to ask all these questions. Instead, they used the Justice Department to go after Republican senators. All right, a quick break, and we'll come right back as we continue our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Blacks Cheryl Support Week. That's the headline. Blacks Cheryl Support Week, according to poll, New York Post. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Warning signs are emerging that New Jersey Democrat gubernatorial contender Mikey Sherrill is struggling to connect with black voters. She leads GOP foe Jack Cittarelli among blacks by only 62 to 19%, with 15% still undecided, according to a recent Quinnipiac Insights poll, which noted she was underperforming with that core block that has been paramount to Democrat victories in Newark, North Jersey, not Delaware, where nearly half of the residents are black and less than one quarter white. Many didn't even know who she was. Who's running? I don't even know who's running, said Yanisa Gaskin, 32, a paraprofessional at an elementary school. You start to lose hope with Democrats. That is who we are for. She sighed. Sonia Wolfrey, 38, who lives in Newark and works in a cafe nearby Irvington, a black city rage. It doesn't matter for whom they vote. Both sides are F-ups to me. But Cheryl's campaign downplayed concerns about a potential softening of support among blacks. It touted Cheryl's partnerships with black communities and the proposal to expand first-time home buyer assistance and a plan to declare a state of emergency on energy costs. You know, very similar to the plan that Kamala Harris outlined about helping with affordable housing costs, if you remember, in her failed campaign for president of the United States. As we continue along here in our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHE, the big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VANARIA, VeneriaDental.com. And Jack was up in Democrat Essex County, New Jersey, last night. He was a huge crowd up there. He's been going to all the Democrat places, and he's been on their turf, which I think is a really smart move, going and being on their turf. And he went to Hudson County. And a huge crowd in Hudson County. Again, this is a Democrat stronghold, and he was there. And this is what I think is the thing that's going to haunt her, and they put out a new ad. Well, Restore NJ put out this ad, and it's Mikey Sherrill talking about, you know, are you willing to commit to not raising the sales tax? And her quote, I'm not going to commit to anything, which I think is going to drag her down. And Jack went through the Bergen Line Hispanic Parade, 50th Hispanic Parade, going right into the heart of Democrat territory, right there in the heart of it. Now, the next debate is tomorrow night at 7 p.m., and you can watch that on ABC 7. That'll be tomorrow night at 7 p.m., Wednesday night. So that's what's going to be happening then. I just, for me, personally, as I'm looking at this race, and I'm very bullish on Jack's chances here. And it's obvious to me the Democrat Party bosses are laying down. They're not laying, they're laying down here. And that's that matters, because if they don't get out there and they don't work hard for Mikey Sherrill, meaning if they don't get out and turn out the base for Mikey Sherrill, then she loses. There's no pathway to victory for her if the core Democrat base does not come out. And the enthusiasm around Chitarelli's candidacy is rampant. It really is. It's rampant. And that's why I say he's got such a great chance here, because I want people to feel optimistic about turning out to vote. I want the turnout to be high, and then he wins. So if Republicans turn out, he wins. It's how it works. I know that it sounds kind of basic, but if people feel like there's no hope, it's going to be rigged or whatever else, then they won't come out, and then, you know, he loses. And the story about the Taylor ham and the pork roll, that got going here too, in a pork roll. But key Democrats are backing Chitarelli. Two prominent officials in North Hudson threw their weight behind Chitarelli: North Bergen Commissioner Alan Pascal and West New York Commissioner Marcos Arroyo. When Democrats in Hudson County are standing with you, you know a change is coming, Chitarelli proclaimed. This isn't about party lines. It's about fixing New Jersey, and I'm the only one candidate with a plan, and the only candidate with a plan to get it done. In addition to those two endorsements, former Hudson County Democratic Chairman Anthony Venneri Jr. is rumored to endorse Chitarelli within days, according to the New Jersey Globe. These endorsements by these Democrats have to do with a couple things. Number one, they absolutely 100% want to be on the winning side. They don't want to be on the outside. And number two, they don't like Mikey Sherrill. They just don't. They don't like Mikey Sherrill, and they think that Mikey Sherrill is bad, a bad candidate. They'd rather try their chances again in 4 years than be stuck with her potentially for eight. So this is a big deal now that this is happening, and, you know, that you've got all these prominent Democrats coming out for Jack. And, you know, yesterday on the show, we talked about the NJEA, the New Jersey Education Association. Well, Representative Josh Gottheimer, who's a Democrat, he's demanded that New Jersey education officials fire Ayat Arabi, who's an editor, for rhetoric that the congressman called violent, anti-Semitic, and anti-Christian. The letter attaches online comments, mostly tweets, including a since-deleted post that says the president of Egypt is filthier than the Jews, and also included posts sympathetic to Hamas. The congressman wrote, Ms. Orabi has an extremely troubling public record of promoting divisive, violent, and hate-filled rhetoric that has no place in our great state, and that must be addressed immediately. As I heard from leaders from across New Jersey, Ms. Orabi's recent appointment raises serious questions and concerns that I know do not align with the NJEA's core values. Well, see, that's your first problem, Congressman. These are the NJEA's core values, and you should recognize that fact, and you should pay attention to that. What you should do is you should understand that the New Jersey Education Association is nothing more than a leftist organization that takes money from teachers and then funnels it to their political prep projects. And yesterday, what we talked about on the show was how they gave $40 million, or at least the president of the union spent $40 million running for governor to come in last place in the Democrat primary for governor. And now Jack is being forced to come out and say that he stands with teachers and he is not anti-teacher. Why does he have to say that? You might ask. You have to see us to say that because the NJEA is lying about him. Oh, you know who else endorsed Jack? The former Democratic mayor of West New York, Sal Vega, endorsed him as well. Another Democrat. Mayor of Dover, New Jersey, endorsed Jack Chitarelli. So Jack had to clarify this
I love teachers. They're critical. I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I'll tell you what I can tell you. Mrs. Stilwell, Ms. Snyder, Ms. Bain, Ms. Giuseppe, Ms. Morgan, Ms. Polowski, Ms. Nye. That's K through 6 before you get into like homeroom and all the other teachers. Those were my teachers, K through 6. I remember their names to this day because the impact teachers have on our kids. I give you my word, anybody who's earned a pension is going to get their pension. So don't let the union tell you differently.
I'm impressed. I can't remember my teachers' names. That's impressive. I'll just give Jack credit for that. That's very, very impressive right there. No doubt about it. That takes a lot. That's impressive. And I also can't remember what I have for breakfast today. But in addition to that, I can't remember my teachers' names either. So, you know, there's that. And then this story from NJ Globe. Cheryl Ad keeps hitting Schiaparelli on a plan he opposes. Democratic gubernatorial candidate maintains insistent on opponents' support of sales tax increase, even though she heard him say he would not raise it. Democrat Mikey Sherrill has a new TV ad where she doubles down on her support for a now-debunked allegation that her Republican opponent, Jack Schiaparelli, supports raising New Jersey's sales tax to 10%. So she's lying. She's lying about Jack's record. At the September 21st gubernatorial debate, Schiaparelli made it clear he would not raise the sales tax, saying it was never under consideration. Moments later, Sherrill rejected a chance to rule out raising the sales tax herself. In Mission, Cheryl says she won't raise the sales tax, identifies herself as a Navy helicopter pilot, which is what she does over and over and over again, a federal prosecutor and a mother of four. This is the second time Cheryl has used a deceptive ad mischaracterizing Schiaparelli's position since the debate 2 weeks ago. She had previously used a seconds-long audio clip about Schiaparelli discussing Tennessee's 10% sales tax. So she's got a new ad out. I'm not going to play it for you because I'm not going to give her the airtime that she would have to pay for lying about Jack and lying about him when she clearly said at that debate and at that debate, Schiaparelli said he would not raise a sales tax, period. And she refused to rule it out. And then she had to walk that position back, too. So just understand Mikey Sherrill is lying. All right. More to come in our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, as we continue along the show, before we get out of here and turn it over to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, I appreciate you being here today. I don't know the answer to the question of what age is it appropriate to give your kid a cell phone. I mean, it's something that we talk about in this house all the time. I was watching Sebastian Maniscalco was on with Bill Maher. I was talking about this issue and saying how it's, you know, other parents wind up giving phones to their kids, and then those kids then have phones, and then your kids want phones because their friends have phones. And I see that with my son, who's going to be 11 next month, and several of his friends have phones. He does not. I did give him my old iPad so that he can FaceTime his friends when he plays video games and that, but there's no other apps on there or anything like that. And every parent I know, we're all struggling with this. We're all dealing with the same question. You know, what is the right age? When should you give your son a phone? When should you give your daughter a phone? And we have these watches for them, which we can call them and we can locate them, and they have GPS trackers on them. And you know, they know that we're not like, you know, tricking them or anything like that. It's the purpose of it is so they get in touch with us and we get in touch with them. This way, if they're at their friend's house or something like that, because you always know where kids are. But, you know, there's times where my son will be out with his buddies riding bikes or something, and you want to make sure you can always reach him. When I was a kid, the idea of having a watch that I could call somebody would have been the freaking coolest thing ever. I mean, I'm Gen X. And so talking watches were the thing of movies. Like Austin Powers, James Bond, obviously. Spy movies, you had talking watches. If I had one in real life, I would have thought that was the coolest thing ever. I mean, when I got a phone in my room and we did a split line so that I could have my own number, I mean, I thought that was amazing. When I got an answering machine, but a talking watch? But nowadays, kids are like, eh, it's just a watch. All I can do is talk on it. All I can do is text. That's it. It blows my mind. It'll blow your mind, too, when I tell you that. Unless you have kids or grandkids that you know what I'm talking about, and you say, yeah, no, I get it. It's certainly an issue with these kids. They just don't think it's cool enough. So I don't know what the answer is. I do know, though, that we are fighting a battle for kids' attention, and this is Generation Alpha, which will be the first generation to grow up in a completely smart environment where they have smartphones and AI and everything else, and there's nothing dumb about their lives. Well, I mean, there's a lot of dumb things in their lives, but I mean, everything is digital, and that's their world, you know. And you don't want to rush this, because once you give it, you can't, it's hard to take it away. You know what I mean? Hard to take it away. But I do notice the games today are so much more intense than they used to be. Like when I was playing Pitfall on my Atari 2600 as a kid, or Donkey Kong or any of those other things, or even when I got into Nintendo and some of the later models, none of those games were as intense today as intense then as the games today. And it's just pure dopamine rush, just ringing bells in the kid's head. Just ringing bells and ding, ding, ding. It's like they might as well be at a slot machine in Vegas in terms of cashing in on that dopamine hit. And I don't know the answer, other than I know that kids have more exposure now to things that can addict them. And we're all addicted probably to our smartphones, and we're all addicted to the light up of somebody liking a post or liking a tweet and all these other things. And, you know, there's a lot of science out there that says, well, from a neuroscience perspective, your phone may be making you depressed, making you less happy. I think what a lot of that is because if you're on your phone too much and you're not around people and you're not getting enough vitamin D and you're not outside and you're not playing, that has to have an effect on you. And and the dopamine levels that are created in your brain from intense online experiences, then it makes things in real life boring. So I've noticed this with my son, where he'll play a game, Roblox or whatever it is, and then we'll go outside and he's just not that into what we're doing if he just played a game. If he hasn't been playing, then he's having fun and everything like this. But to go from digital to analog, from a digital video game to then the analog of throwing a ball around in the backyard, it doesn't give the same, you know, firing of dopamine and the reward centers and everything like this. And so with kids in particular, we have a lot of kids who are COVID kids. So they spent years on their computers anyway, learning in Google Classroom and all these other things that it's become so hardwired into them. And then add to the fact that they'll play with each other on games, but they won't be physically present with each other. I would go to my buddy's house, at least back in the day. We'd play Madden, but we were all in his basement hanging out together, taking turns on the remote controls, order a pizza, then maybe watch a movie, hang out, and, you know, ride our bikes and do other things too. Nowadays, kids will be on, they'll be playing a game. They won't even be in the same room. They may not even be in the same town. My son will play with his cousin who lives in Princeton. And it's also the kind of thing too, where when you take it away from them for a few days, you definitely notice a difference in their attitude and their attention levels and their motivation and everything. I think Skynet went from creating robots to want to kill us to creating things that would just addict us online, so that we all just became completely and utterly desensitized and just said, sure, give me my phone, Master Overlord. And then as more and more schools are banning phones, too. And I think it's true that it's a good idea to keep phones out of the kids' hands in classrooms. But I don't know if it's that the kids are addicted to their phone or it's just simply a matter of they're not getting the things that they should be getting, like exercise and vitamin D and everything. Because I would play Legend of Zelda or Metroid for 8 hours at a clip when I was a kid. I don't know if it's truly that as much as it is that they... the stimulation that they get, and then they go outside into the digital world, or the analog world, I should say, and it just doesn't meet that same level. And then as time goes on, and they're getting less and less free time outside and play time outside and sunshine and all the other things and running around and being kids, that kind of has a cumulative effect. I think probably some of that's true. I think a lot of this is we're just kind of still discovering this. Or how do you really even study it? Now, whose kids are going to be the guinea pigs to really study this? And it's certainly something where you can't have government regulate it because it's too difficult to do that. And I don't want government to regulate it. Parents just have to do it on themselves. It's just that there are movements now that are popping up, like asking parents to join in to say, don't give your kids a cell phone until they're in eighth grade. But for a lot of parents, they say, well, but I want to be able to reach my kids and... So then I say the talking watch, but then the kids go, the talking watch is boring, and then they don't want to wear it, and then they forget it. And like, where's your talking watch that I would have thought was the coolest freaking thing in the world when I was your age? A talking freaking watch. And then if they don't find it to be interesting, so then they turn around and they say, all right, I'm not going to wear it. But I also think there's a lot of positives that kids can get from playing video games. And there's been research on this, too. It teaches kids critical thinking. There's positives. Probably the answer comes down to moderation in that sense. We're not going to be getting our son a phone anytime soon. And if it is, it'll be a dumb smartphone. So they have these out now where they're basically just for calling and texting, no apps. This is interesting from a free market perspective. As iPhones and all these other very smart, sophisticated phones have come out, a new market, Bark is one of them, and Pinwheel's another. And I'm sure there's other brands too. And they're smart, dumb phones. So basically what they are is they look like an iPhone. You can control as a parent the apps that your kids are able to have access to, but it has the calling and the texting features. But then you decide what rabbit holes you want them to go down because you have to give permission for them to have any of the apps on their phone or things like that. But there's always a workaround. I'm a big believer in this. Kids are smart and they'll figure out a workaround. So there's one phone in particular that doesn't even have a web browser on it because they know that that's a lot of the kids are just go online if you can't have a particular app. Smart dumb phones, a new market for that. It's like non-alcoholic beer. Did you? I noticed that Athletic Brewing, which is non-alcoholic, just on this is now in Costco. Isn't that something? The rise of people who want non-alcoholic drinks. So there's a market for everything, and that's a beautiful thing, at least about our country, is that there's no shortage of ways to sell it and innovate. All right, that's the show. Have a great rest of your night tonight. I will see you again tomorrow. Don't forget, sign up for our big rally in Wildwood on Friday with Jack Cittarelli and our great speakers, 1210wphd.com. And also sign up for our Politics and Pints with Navy SEAL international bestselling author Jack Carr. Cry Havoc is out today. Sign up today, get your tickets, and join us for Politics and Pints on Monday, October 13th, Bucks County Community College, the Zlock Performing Arts Center, 1210wphd.com. Keep the conversation going on X. Give me your thoughts on when kids should get a phone. Have a great rest of your night. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.